So with all the creative energy at our command, let us begin an era of national renewal.
We heard the voice of a new president in 1981, a voice challenging us to dream.
And let us renew our faith and our hope. We have every right to dream heroic dreams.
In an all-out nuclear war, more destructive power than in all of World War II would be unleashed every second.
We heard the voice of an outgoing president warn of the nightmares of modern war.
A World War II every second. More people killed in the first few hours than in all the wars of history put together.
The sounds of war, the sounds of violence, would jar us repeatedly, whether captured during an ambush in Afghanistan or from the echoes in St. Peter's Square, a hotel in Washington, or a parade ground near Cairo.
There were happy sounds in 1981. 52 Americans held captive in Iran for 444 days came home.
Six, five, four, we've gone.
Americans returned to space for the first time in 6 years.
On Earth, airlines had to juggle schedules when flight controllers went on strike and then were fired.
And as in every year, there were memorable statements uttered in the arena of public events, words that instantly became quotes.
There are contingency plans to fire a nuclear weapon for demonstrative purposes.
The president has been shot once in the left chest.
It is long past time for us to say enough.
The moment your blood pressure goes up, the moment that you have an ulcer, you're finished as an air traffic controller.
They understood the law. They took an oath that they would not strike. I think it's not a case of firing. I think they've quit.
We believe
events are easily forgotten. Sounds are not so easily forgotten and keep memories alive against the erosion of time.
This is Mark Huffman.
I'm Bob Moon.
And this is The World in Sound.
As of now, I am in control here in the White House, pending return of the vice president, and in close touch with him.
The essence of the agreement is, following the release of our hostages.
2 days before he left office, President Carter made an announcement he wanted to make many months earlier.
We don't yet know exactly how fast this procedure will go. We are prepared to move as rapidly as possible. All the preparations have been completed, pending the final documents being signed.
The U.S. and Iran had agreed on terms for releasing the 52 Americans held hostage since November 4, 1979. The release, President Carter hoped, would come before he turned over the presidency to Ronald Reagan.
It was noon on January 20th. The 52 Americans were still prisoners of Iran.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability,
and will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Now, congratulate you, sir.
Shortly after Reagan completed the oath of office, as to Reagan completed the oath of office, as to Reagan completed the oath of office, as to Reagan completed the oath of office, as his speech at a post-inaugural luncheon.
With thanks to Almighty God, I have been given a tagline, the get-off line that everyone wants for the end of a toast or a speech or anything else. Some 30 minutes ago, the planes bearing our prisoners left Iranian airspace and are now free of Iran.
Here's how the news of freedom was delivered in towns across America.
At the home of Virgil Sickman, family and friends were celebrating the release of the hostages, including a Marine sergeant named Rocky Sickman, when the phone rang.
How's it going, Dad?
Hey, Colonel Rocky! How you doing? Hello?
How's it going, Dad?
Hey, how are you?
What are you doing?
Love you all.
Hey, Rocky, what you at?
We know we've been watching you all evening. We keep pinching ourselves all day today.
Boy, you kept pinching yourself.
For the 52 Americans, it was an odyssey. They were flown to West Germany, where they were greeted by former President Carter, who learned firsthand of the hostages' treatment.
The acts of barbarism,
which were perpetrated on our people by Iran can never be condoned. Iran, in my judgment, and the people responsible in Iran for this criminal act ought to be condemned by all law-loving, decent people of the world.
Former hostage Bruce German told of one terrifying time he called Night of the Gestapo.
That was as close as I've ever come to total terror. That particular night. It was what they call a security shakedown. They had reports that we were passing notes and communicating, and some of the guys may have had weapons. How that was possible, I don't know. What weapons, you know, a spoon? So they brought in these goons with the Uzis and G3s and shook the place down. We assumed the classic position against the walls with our blindfolds, and they cocked the guns in our ears, and we experienced total terror.
The odyssey continued. From West Germany, the 52 Americans traveled to the military academy at West Point to be reunited with their families.
Thousands of Americans stood along the road to West Point, cheering and waving flags and yellow ribbons. Yellow ribbons had become the unofficial symbol of the hostages' captivity, and they were everywhere. A giant yellow ribbon was tied above the New Orleans Superdome as the Oakland Raiders beat the Philadelphia Eagles 27-10 in the Super Bowl.
The odyssey came to an end on the south lawn of the White House.
The 52 Americans seized during the tenure of one president came home to be welcomed by another. Ronald Reagan was president now, and in tone and substance, he tried to show there had been a changing of the guard, a transition in the way Americans viewed themselves and their world.
Turn the page and look ahead, and do so knowing that for all who serve their country, whether in the foreign service, the military, or as private citizens, freedom is indivisible. Your freedom and your individual dignity are much cherished. Those henceforth in the representation of this nation will be accorded every means of protection that America can offer. When the rules of international behavior are violated, our policy will be one of swift and effective retribution.
President Reagan inherited a shaky economy as he entered the White House, and he sounded the alarm in a speech to the nation in early February.
I regret to say that we're in the worst economic mess since the Great Depression.
And in a speech to Congress 2 weeks later, Reagan spelled out his economic plan.
This plan is aimed at reducing the growth in government spending and taxing, reforming and eliminating regulations which are unnecessary and unproductive or counterproductive, and encouraging a consistent monetary policy aimed at maintaining the value of the currency.
Reagan's economic plan was based on an untried theory called supply-side economics. Reagan proposed cutting nearly every government program except defense, but promised not to wipe out all social programs.
Those who, through no fault of their own, must depend on the rest of us, the poverty-stricken, the disabled, the elderly, all those with true need, can rest assured that the social safety net of programs they depend on are exempt from any cuts.
Budget Director David Stockman took the lead in selling the president's plan to a sometimes hostile Congress.
Our problem is that we have more good purposes, more desirable objectives, more plausible programs, at least from somebody's point of view or some recipient or region's point of interest, than we can possibly fund if we expect to turn around the entire economy.
Many Democrats, like Robert Byrd of West Virginia, called Stockman's approach insensitive and cruel.
Well, Mr. Stockman has said that the people don't have a right to services. He hasn't read the preamble of the Constitution lately, which says that the purpose of this government is to ensure domestic tranquility, to provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare. And in all of these areas, the government has to perform services that the people themselves can't perform.
63 Southern Democrats in the House sided with the president, while the Republican majority prevailed in the Senate, and Reagan got his package of tax and budget cuts.
This represents $130 billion in savings over the next 3 years. This represents $750 billion in tax cuts over the next 5 years. And this is only the beginning, because from here on now, we are going to have to implement all of these, and it's going to be a job to make this whole turnaround work.
President Reagan had scored a spectacular victory in winning approval of his economic policy.
By September, though, it was apparent Wall Street had not been won over. The stock market tumbled as deficit projections jumped. Unemployment rose to 8%, and the president conceded the economy had slipped into a recession.
There was another embarrassment in November. In a magazine article, Budget Director Stockman was quoted as seriously questioning the administration's economic policy. Stockman went to the White House and offered to resign.
At the end of the meeting, the president asked me to stay on the team. But let me be clear on my own account. I would not be here now, nor would I have worked 16 hours per day for nearly a year if I did not believe in the president and in his policy.
Many Republicans and Democrats alike publicly expressed doubts about Stockman's future effectiveness.
The Reagan administration's plan to boost defense spending was only one sign of a new posture toward the Soviet Union.
I know of no leader of the Soviet Union since the revolution, and including the present leadership, that has not more than once repeated in the various communist congresses they hold their determination that their goal must be the promotion of world revolution and a one-world socialist or communist state.
While the U.S. and the Soviet Union exchanged heated rhetoric, some people in Europe began to worry that if these two superpowers got into a fight, Europe in the middle would become a nuclear battlefield. The European peace movement began to grow.
Why I'm here? Well, because I fought in the last war, and I thought that was going to be the end of it.
I'm demonstrating against nuclear weapons, and especially nuclear weapons in Europe. The Americans can keep them.
We've come here so we can put up flags to say we don't want nuclear weapons.
Despite the protest, U.S. officials, such as Secretary of State Alexander Haig, still commented publicly about the unthinkable, the use of nuclear weapons.
There are contingency plans in the NATO doctrine to fire a nuclear weapon for demonstrative purposes, to demonstrate to the other side that they are exceeding the limits of toleration in the conventional area.
In November, President Reagan tried to defuse the mounting anxiety in Europe by proposing the U.S. and Soviets both reduce nuclear weapons on the continent.
With Soviet agreement, we could together substantially reduce the dread threat of nuclear war which hangs over the people of Europe. This, like the first footstep on the moon, would be a giant step for mankind.
The winds of change continued to sweep across the music industry in 1981. In the midst of punk and new wave, Christopher Cross emerged as a potent new force as he picked up a handful of Grammy Awards in late February.
I guess just a feather in my cap. I'm sure that because of it, I'll get mainly more press probably. And I'm not going to deny that I like it. It's certainly nice making more than $150 a week, but I think the radio and the press is how I got the success that I've gotten because, you know, people found out I was and the record got played. So I'll just get more of that. That worked before, so I'm digging it.
As the music industry gained a new voice, it lost its conscience. Harry Chapin, an artist known for his social causes as much as his music, died in a car accident just hours before a benefit concert. Fans showed up anyway in a tribute to the songwriter's storyteller. Also saw the return of the music force from the 60s. Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel, once known collectively as Simon and Garfunkel, performed in New York's Central Park before a half million people. It was many things to many people, but to Art Garfunkel, it was just great.
One of the greatest pleasures I've ever had in life is harmonizing. And I've missed it. And to make that blend again is a great pleasure. Working night to find.
In country music, Dolly Parton went Hollywood, starring in the film 9 to 5, for which she sang the title song. Tell me you're trying to
cure a 7-year-old. Less noticed, perhaps, was the emergence of Johnny Cash's daughter, Roseanne, as a country artist in her own right.
I feel like country music is changing in a real healthy way right now. It's
if rock is going in one direction, then country music is going maybe in the direction where rock used to be. It's simple, but with contemporary lyrics.
For more than a decade, the status of women in the eyes of the law had been the subject of debate. Debate that continued in 1981.
Every day of this countdown period is one less day for equal rights. Perhaps this is the last chance in this century to gain full rights.
On June 30th, Eleanor Smeal of the National Organization for Women kicked off a last-ditch drive to win ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. The ratification deadline was just 12 months away, and the ERA backers were still three states away from the needed 38.
Phyllis Schlafly of Stop ERA was already claiming victory.
No state has ratified ERA in the last 4.5 years, and I see no prospect that any state will ratify in the remaining 12 months. I think the American people have rejected the Equal Rights Amendment. They don't want to be forced into a society in which women must be treated exactly like men.
The Supreme Court ruled that women may be excluded from a military draft. Feminist leaders interpreted the ruling as a setback for women. On the street in San Francisco, the view was mixed.
I think it's very unfortunate. The Supreme Court obviously thinks that women ought to be kept barefoot pregnant in the kitchen.
I think it's a real shame because men who get shot by bullets die just as easily and experience just as much pain as women would, and there's no reason that war should be restricted to men only.
I like the decision. I think the fewer people altogether that are subject to the draft, the better off we all are.
President Reagan, who opposed the ERA, nominated a candidate to replace retiring Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart. The nomination shattered nearly 200 years of tradition.
I'm pleased to announce that upon completion of all the necessary checks by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, I will send to the Senate the nomination of Judge Sandra Day O'Connor of Arizona Court of Appeals for confirmation as an Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
Judge O'Connor drew praise from liberals and conservatives alike. Though anti-abortion groups opposed her nomination, she won Senate confirmation by a vote of 99-0.
I'm absolutely overjoyed with the expression of support from the Senate. And my hope is that 10 years from now, after I've been across the street at work for a while, that they will all feel glad that they gave me the wonderful vote they did today, and I'll certainly work hard to make that happen.
Justice O'Connor took her seat on the Supreme Court on the first Monday in October. After 2 years of delay, the space shuttle Columbia was finally declared ready for launch.
T-minus 9 minutes and holding.
Space rookie Robert Crippen joined veteran John Young in the cockpit of the Columbia. On the morning of April 10th, the countdown got as far as T-minus 9 minutes when a computer problem forced yet another frustrating delay.
The launch director George Page and center director Dick Smith have just announced that we will scrub the launch attempt for today.
2 days later, everything went like clockwork as Hugh Harris of NASA proceeded with the countdown.
7, 6, 5, 4. We've gone for main engine start. We have main engine start. The shuttle has cleared the tower.
After 2 days in orbit, America's revolutionary new spaceship started the risky trip home, zooming toward a desert runway in California.
Right on glide slope. Approaching center line. Looking great.
2,500 feet.
Clear? They're coming. They're down. 50 feet. 40. 30. 20. 10. 5. 4. 3, 2, 1, touchdown. Welcome home, Columbia. Beautiful, beautiful.
It was another milestone in American technology. For the first time, a spaceship blasted into orbit and returned safely to Earth, landing like an airplane.
In November, after another scrubbed launch, the Columbia became the world's first reused spaceship, returning to space for another two-day mission.
The technological success scored by the shuttle in space was in contrast to a failure of technology here on Earth, the failure to control a tiny pest called the Mediterranean fruit fly.
It's a
close call. It's a difficult call.
California Governor Jerry Brown, sensitive to environmentalist complaints about aerial pesticide spraying, tried to eradicate the fly with a ground spraying program instead.
I believe that in a free society, when people have their own homes and their own families, that a governor should not, except as a last resort, order aerial mellifying invasion of their homes against their will.
But after the federal government threatened California's produce industry with quarantine, Brown gave in and ordered aerial spraying.
Fleets of helicopters worked around the clock to stop the spread of the medfly.
In Kansas City, Missouri, on the evening of July 17th, there was another failure of technology with tragic consequences.
Come to the Hyatt Regency immediately. Three sky bridges fell in.
Three what?
Sky bridges holding people from the third floor fell and crashed.
Okay.
Immediately.
Hyatt Regency
immediately.
All right.
At 7 p.m., hundreds of people were gathered in the lobby at the Hyatt Regency Hotel for a weekly tea dance. Hundreds more stood on two futuristic aerial walkways over the lobby. Later, two dancers remembered that it all happened suddenly.
There were no sounds, nothing. People didn't even have time to scream. It just happened so fast.
I was facing that direction and just kind of looking out the window across the street, and there was sort of a cloud of dust, and they just the top one just sort of collapsed like this onto the second catwalk, and then they sort of hesitated there for a minute, and then they just went to the floor. Just a sandwich like that on top of each other.
111 people died. Another 190 were hurt.